Hey guys, it's Candace.
And it's Elena.
And this is Cousins on Crime. Okay, so for this case, I'm going to be taking you across the pond for some fresh air. That's right, we're going to sunny England.
Okay, I like it. Mm-hmm. Something different.
Yes. I thought I would, take us away from the 70s cases because apparently, I don't know why that's the only decade I can do a case on, but this case did not happen in the 70s, and it also didn't happen in the U.S., so I'm changing things up a bit. As always, my sources are in the show notes, but I mostly drew from local papers from the area. In September of 1993, a 30-year-old woman named Dawn Wisdom was living in East London. Dawn had met and befriended a guy named Anthony Ayres. He was 25 at this time, and their relationship began to blossom into something more than just friends. Anthony was a little pipsqueak. he was actually referred to as a pint-sized builder in the British media because he was only 5 foot tall, which I just love English people for this because that's their like version of an insult is to insult someone's height. It's just so nice. Anthony soon moved in with Dawn, but it took her only about 3 months to get fed up with his crap. He had a really bad temper, and he had been violent towards her. She believed he was also stealing from her, which all of this together was just a bad combination. So she'd had enough, and she's like, you need to go. Bye-bye now.
All right. She's taking care of herself. She's taking up for herself. I like it.
That's right. She's a strong woman. And Anthony did what most scorned men do in this situation, and he threatened her with a knife. That seems totally normal to me. Dawn's father was not having this, and he told the Romford Recorder that when he found out about Anthony and how he was threatening Dawn with violence, he tried to intervene. And he was going to go over there. He was going to go to her flat.
Good for you, Dad.
Yeah, he was going to give Anthony a stern talking to and, you know, probably beat him up a little bit. He didn't say that, but I think that's what most daddies do. I would hope that he was planning to beat him up. But he said Dawn begged him not to come over there. She's like, please just, you know, let me work it out. And he said he always regrets respecting her wishes. Because later that very day, she didn't show up for work. When her mom and her brother went over to check on her, they found her in her flat, dead. Her jewelry had been stolen and some other valuables were taken, and it was later determined that Anthony had pawned them. So they are looking for this guy. They're like, he's our prime suspect here. Can't be anybody else. So 3 days after the murder, Anthony was located outside of a West Ham underground station, and he was arrested. When they picked him up, he said, I was going to turn myself in tomorrow. Is she dead? I didn't mean to strangle her. It just kind of happened.
Well, was she dead when you left her?
Well, he just basically says he thinks he killed her because he just kind of snapped and lost control. But the judge said he was a serious danger to women, so he was convicted and sentenced to a life term in 1994 to serve the minimum of 19 years for strangling Dawn. A life term in England doesn't really mean life in prison. It's kind of like life with the possibility of parole here. in the U.S.
Okay.
So once he was convicted, the jury was able to hear about a string of convictions of violent crimes against women he had prior to this. I don't know why they didn't feel that this information was admissible during the trial, but I think it feels pretty relevant to me, but nevertheless, this information came out after his conviction. So I guess like before the sentencing phase. So the jury heard that back in 1988, he throttled his girlfriend until she passed out. That just means he choked her. I actually had to ask Daniel what that meant in the Queen's English, because I was like,
different words means different things.
Exactly. And if some listeners don't know, my husband's from England. I don't know if I've touched on that before, but so Anthony was sentenced to 2 years for that crime, for choking his girlfriend.
Okay.
But he was let out on parole. So this is back in 1988.
Okay.
Then the following year in 1989, while he was out on parole, he strangled yet another one of his girlfriends and cut her neck with a knife. He apparently attacked her because she wouldn't have sex with him after being with him for 10 days.
What?
I mean, I guess she didn't know that there's a rule that you're supposed to sleep with a guy after 10 days. Like 9 days, fine. You don't have to sleep with him, but 10... You know what I mean?
Jesus.
Yeah. It's required. Come on, Anthony. Like, are you 15? Get a life.
He wants what he wants.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and what she wants is not him. So, now reports say he caused injury to her neck with a carving knife. I wasn't able to find any more detail about that particular attack, like specific injuries, but it wasn't life-threatening. She lived. And so for that attack, he was convicted of unlawful wounding, which again, I love the English. It just sounds so, so sweet. Unlawful wounding. It's much better than Americans and our assault with a deadly weapon, you know?
Well, because is there a lawful wounding?
I mean, I don't think so, but it just sounds much better than our titles of our offenses, I guess you could say. Us Americans can be quite intense sometimes. Mm. After this attack, he fled to Southern Ireland and was able to evade arrest for 4 years. Then he was finally caught and put in prison for his life sentence for the murder of Dawn.
Okay.
So that's the end of the story.
Wait, I need more. Like,
what if that was the end of the story?
You're fired.
Your face was like,
I waited April all this Fool's. Time.
Okay. Oh my gosh. So Anthony served his minimum of 19 years for the murder of Dawn Wisdom and was released on license in 2012. Now, being released on license means that he's like continuing to serve his prison sentence, but he's out on parole, is basically what that means.
Gotcha.
He had to abide by certain conditions while he was out. Otherwise, he would be put back in. Just like here in the U.S., when you're on parole, you can't violate your terms of parole. So after his release, he lived in Fillmore's Bail Hostel in Pitsy, I believe that's how you pronounce it, for a bit. And then he moved to Canvey Island to be near his family. Canvey Island is not actually an island. It's still in England. It's more of like a peninsula on the coast. It's east of central London, just like on the coast. He did some work as a gardener, and this was something he learned how to do in prison, which, I mean, slow clap.
Right.
But the island flooded and he lost most of his work. So he's just kind of being a bum for a while. On November 19th, 2015, this is 3 years after he was let out, he went over to hang out with some friends. Now, the details of the beginning of the day are a little fuzzy. I read many conflicting reports about how these three people came to be in the same place. So I tried to take the latest information from the most accurate news outlets. And actually, most of this account comes from the only key witness in the case, which was a man named Joseph Withers. He was the only other person present. So Anthony lived on Fairlop Avenue, which is where Joseph Withers also lived, just down the street. And he went to meet up with his then-girlfriend, Kelly Pierce, at Joseph's flat. So he's going to go down the street, hang out with Joseph and Kelly. This is where there are conflicting reports. Some said he was asked to come over there, and some said that he followed them over there, like they were all out and about and they met up somewhere and then he followed them back there.
Interesting.
It may seem that the detail of this is inconsequential, but I think the truth of the matter would shed light as to the mood amongst the three of them. You know what I'm saying?
Right, exactly.
Like whether he was welcome over there or not. What we do know for sure, though, is that Anthony was seen on CCTV footage pacing kind of back and forth before he knocked on the door of the flat. Joseph answered the door and let him in and said he and Kelly asked Anthony for 10 pounds to go buy some cigarettes. Anthony was like, yeah, I mean, I'd give you the 10 pounds, but I left my wallet back at home. So Joseph kind of walked out the door like, okay, let's go get it. Let's go get your wallet. I guess he was under the impression they were going to walk back to Anthony's place, get the money, and then go get the cigarettes. But after he walked out the door, instead of following him out, Anthony closed the door and locked him out of his own flat.
Okay.
Joseph was like, dude, what's up with you, this? Actually, he was probably like, mate. I'm going to get totally reamed for that, by the way.
You probably should have had Daniel do the voiceovers.
No. Oh, my gosh. Well, he wasn't alarmed right away. He's like reaching into his pocket for his keys, and then he hears some commotion inside. So he kind of like listens in the door, just either does someone need help in there, or should I give them a minute, if you know what I'm saying? And so once he realized they weren't having fun in there, and something worse was happening, he starts fumbling around to find his keys. Like he's kind of panicking. So he opens his door, and once he gets inside, he saw Anthony beating Kelly with a hammer.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. She was laying helplessly in the bathroom, covered in blood. She was still being attacked when he went inside.
No.
Yeah. And when Anthony realized Joseph had come back in, he bounced. He's like,
I gotta get out of here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Joseph quickly phoned 999 around 4:56 p.m. and reported the attack. He told the dispatcher the victim was stabbed and beaten with a hammer, but she was still gurgling. So he was like, please get some help over here. He also told the person on the phone that he and his friend Kelly were hanging out when this guy named Anthony came over and just started attacking Kelly. And this is why I care about the details of how they all came together at that flat, because on this phone call, he kind of makes it sound like Anthony wasn't exactly invited over. So when the paramedics arrived, Kelly was still breathing, but barely. She was gasping and struggling to get air. She was rushed to the Royal London Hospital, where she later died from her injuries about 3 hours later.
Oh, man.
Essex police found the hammer at the scene, but they were never able to locate the knife that was used. They immediately launched a manhunt for Anthony and located him in South End the next day. Actually, it was an off-duty officer that found him. And he was still wearing his blood-stained clothes.
Oh, of course, because he has no conscience.
I know, he's just like a bum, just walking around with bloody clothes on. Can you imagine passing him by on the street? a guy covered in blood? I mean...
Right, do you mind your own business, or do you, like...
I remember watching I think it was a See No Evil episode one time, and the killer, like, walked into the gas station to get something, and he literally, you could see in the video, he had blood all over his jeans, like the bottom of his jeans, and on his sweatshirt.
Wow.
And they later, like, interviewed the cashier, and they were like, yeah, I saw he was covered in blood, and I thought it was really weird, but...
like... Do you need
some help,
bro?
I don't know what people think.
Right.
I would call somebody. But anyhow, I digress. So his hands were not only bloody, but they were covered in cuts when he was picked up. He said, look, I hate my past and I'm very embarrassed by it, but I didn't kill Kelly.
Okay.
You're embarrassed by your past?
Because you killed somebody.
As in, you're embarrassed that you murdered someone before? No. Embarrassed is when you accidentally fart in a business meeting, sir. Okay?
You're embarrassed, murdering, but you're gonna try to murder another person.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure embarrassed means the same thing here as it does in England. And it's not embarrassing to murder someone. It's actually disgraceful. So, he said that he knew it looked bad. And he wanted to leave the scene because considering his record, they would think he did it. But he's like, I didn't do it. I just found her like that. Well, Kelly's autopsy revealed that she had been hit at least 10 times with the claw hammer before being stabbed 40 times in the face and neck with a knife that was about 10 centimeters in length. Now... That's savage.
That's, absolutely.
Yeah. And her head was beaten so savagely that chunks of her hair were stuck to the bathroom wall.
Oh.
I mean, that's brutal. In one of the stab wounds to her neck, her jugular vein was punctured. Mm. So let's talk about the trial for this murder. At this point in my research, I'm wondering... how people in England get representation if they can't afford a defense attorney, you know? Like, here, there are public defenders. Because Anthony was a scrub, and I knew, like, his little odd jobs here and there were not going to be worthy of hiring a good attorney. Well, I'll tell you how it went down in this case. Anthony Ayres was given... more than £50,000 of taxpayer money to fund his defense.
He was what?
He was given over £50,000 of taxpayer money to fund his defense.
How? I'm confused.
Yeah, so this was found out because... the victims of the 1982 Hyde Park bombing were turned down for legal aid, so they took out a civil lawsuit against the suspected bomber. Well, as a result of this lawsuit, they discovered that John Downey, the suspected bomber, was granted $50,000 in legal aid for his defense. So they were naturally pissed off because they're like, so we're victims of a crime and we don't get any aid.
Whose idea is this?
I have no idea. I've never heard of this. I guess it's similar to a public defender because we're, as taxpayers, we're paying for a public defender's time. It's not much, but we don't just grant legal aid money to criminals. But I was shocked to hear this, too. So they started, these victims started dredging up other criminals who had received financial aid. And it was found out that Anthony Ayers was one, and he spent a total of £50,746 on his defense attorney, which is a chunk of change.
For sure.
Now, Anthony stood trial for the murder of Kelly Pierce at Chelmsford Crown Court in 2016. This was just the following year that he killed her. Prosecutors Carnes Nelson and Peter Gare, I think I'm saying those names right, laid out a pretty strong case against Anthony. While the defense did what they could only really do, which was blame the only other person that was there, Joseph Withers, as being the real killer, who, as it turns out, was diagnosed a paranoid schizophrenic.
For a man with that condition to witness everything that went on, that's terrible. Yeah. And now he's being blamed for the murder.
Yeah, and they were also like, hey, it was Joseph's flat. Kelly was murdered there, so it's obviously Joseph that killed her. Yeah, the defense also claimed that Joseph had been known to threaten violence in the past, and Anthony's attorney also suggested his drug use exacerbated his psychotic episodes. And he even said, look at her injuries. And he said, quote, these injuries were caused by someone who has completely lost touch with reality. So he's like, no one in their right mind could have done this to a person. Like, it's got to be someone with a mental illness, of course.
Right.
Anthony said he knows just as much as everybody else does. She had to have been attacked before he found her body because he just came upon her. He also tried to further distance himself from Kelly by just saying, you know, the victim and I, we didn't have a romantic relationship. We just had casual sex sometimes, which, okay, I mean, good argument. Thank you for that. I don't know how that is going to prove your innocence, but thank you for that detail.
Right.
Anthony testified during the trial, telling the jury, when he was still in prison, he attended anger management classes to learn how to cope with his drinking and relationships. And he said, look, I'm a different person now than I was years ago. I've done a lot of hard work to turn my life around. Especially when he got out, you know, he got a job, he moved closer to his parents so he could be more stable. He also blamed his skewed perception of women on his father's abusive nature towards his mother. He claimed, you know, abusive women was just a learned behavior. And I mean, he admits that when he became an adult, he knew it was wrong, but basically implied like he couldn't help himself. Like it was hardwired at that point and he needed to relearn how to behave in a civilized manner, which
and now he's grow just up, a total Anthony. Different person.
He also told the jury that he did let Kelly down, but insists it wasn't because he killed her. It was because he'd left her alone with Joseph Withers,
right,
who he knew was dangerous. So he said he was at that flat earlier in the afternoon. He snapped a pair of scissors at Kelly's request so she could use one of the blades to dig out a crack pipe that she had. She was a known drug user. Then he left after a little bit, and when he returned, he heard this alarm going off in the flat. So he entered through an unlocked door and he called out, hey, is anybody here? Your alarm's going off. And then out the corner of his eye, he caught Kelly's body in the bathroom. Like he sees her all bloody in there. He says he went in there to check for a pulse, but he started having a panic attack. There was blood. The alarm was going off and he freaked out and fled. Says nothing of Joseph being there or anything like that. Which, if you're going to lie about everything else, why not just lie and say you saw Joseph doing it? You know what I mean? So the trial lasted about 2 weeks, a jury of 6 women and 6 men deliberated for just 4 hours and unanimously returned a guilty verdict. And once the verdict was read, several reports say he gave a wry smile.
Wow.
This time, he was sentenced to a, quote, whole life term, end quote, which means, taken literally, he will die in prison. So, a life term in England is like a life with the possibility of parole here, and then a whole life term is basically without parole. So, after his conviction, Kelly's mom, Lynn Wallings, released a statement that said, in part, Kelly had mental health problems and had addictions and demons, but deep down she was a very loving human. Judge Mara McGowan was quoted as saying to Anthony Ayers, Kelly's life was blighted by drugs in recent years, but we heard she was fun, kind, and with a warm-hearted personality. You set about an attack of extreme brutality bordering on sadism. Like, yeah, she had her issues, but you don't just get to kill somebody. Right. It doesn't make her life less important. So,
exactly.
Like, you suck. Kelly's mom continued in her statement, on November 19th, 2015, Kelly was cowardly and brutally murdered at the hands of Anthony Ayers. On that day, my life and that of her family was shattered forever. Since her death, I have found it difficult to smile or laugh or live with any sense of happiness. Part of my heart and life was taken too when she died.
Bless
Kelly
her heart.
Loved Josh dearly and was always referring to him as her pride and joy. Kelly was such a colorful person. She was beautiful, kind, and caring. Josh was Kelly's son. She had a son.
Mm.
Her mother and all her friends remember her as loud and bubbly, and basically you heard her before you saw her. She just had a drug addiction. You know, it's a disease. And the thing I think about that's so sad when people are going through a hard time with drug addiction is every day is a new opportunity, you know, and we never know how hard a drug addict is working to get through their illness. Mm-hmm. And it's just really sad. Like, she was just having a rough go.
Yeah.
Now, this crime in particular outraged everyone, that a convicted murderer with a prior violent history would be let out, like, yeah, ever.
Yeah, I'm over here, like, the whole time you're telling the story, I'm, like, fuming over here. Like, at some point, it's the government's responsibility, you know, to keep these people safe.
Yeah, and why did he only serve 19 years when he murdered Dawn?
Right.
It doesn't make sense. Like, so, the brother of Dawn Wisdom came forward to speak out. Alan Wisdom said, to be a repeat offender, to go back out into society, is just beyond belief. Mm-hmm. I can't even imagine how hard it is for Dawn's family to have, you know, moved on from their loved one's murder. And then just when you think enough time has passed and it, you know, the sting has kind of left from the whole incident, he's let out and he kills again.
Right.
I bet that just, like, is next level betrayal for her family.
Absolutely.
Just dredges everything up again. Now, the National Probation Service that is responsible for freed offenders said they reviewed the situation to, quote, identify any lessons for the better management of future cases. End quote. I mean, yeah, you need to take a look at why, like, the sentence was what it was, mm-hmm, when he was a repeat offender.
Yeah, let's learn from this situation. And
yeah,
I mean, obviously you have a psychopath, someone who doesn't have a care for human life. And he's proven that by Dawn's situation, that was his third attempt. And, you know, he ended up killing her. But the previous two, I mean, he obviously has a pattern here.
Yeah, yeah. And it, I read one report that he had attacked a guy, like tried to stab a boy years and years before that, too. So his violence was just escalating.
Right. I mean,
he went from trying to attack someone to actually choking someone to actually choking and stabbing someone. And then he murdered someone.
Right. And
by strangling, which is the same thing he had done to, you know, his, one of his previous victims. And then I don't get how all of that violence didn't account for anything when he was sentenced to life for Dawn's murder.
Right. And I mean, I'm a firm
believer. That's what I don't get.
Yeah. I'm totally with you. But I believe that people can change, that God can change people's hearts. But, I mean, did he have a psych evaluation before he got out? I mean, even at that,
that's a good question.
People can fake their evaluations or whatever. But, like I said, some people can change, but there's a fine line, especially when you've got this kind of pattern.
Yeah, and to kind of touch on what he told the jury, like, listen, I watched my dad beat my mom, and that's just something I learned was acceptable as a child, and so I've just beat on every girl that I've ever had. Nature and nurture, do we blame the nurture for that?
Mm.
Or do we blame nature? I mean, he admitted, you know, as an adult, I knew it was wrong. Mm-hmm. And I've done all this stuff to change myself. No, I don't think so.
Mm-mm.
I think you are a piece of crap. You were born that way. You were raised that way. And you haven't learned anything because you've only escalated your violence.
Right.
So Roger Hurst, who was Essex's, I don't know, is that the right grammar? Essex Police and Crime Commissioner, that's, say that three times fast, launched an investigation into how Anthony Ayers could have been let out of prison when he had such a serious criminal history. I wish I could tell you what was found from that investigation, but really there isn't any update from, I mean, it's just, I don't know, are they just trying to appease us by saying, oh, we'll look into it? You know, that was back in 2016, and there really isn't any updated information as far as if any precedent has come from this or what have you. I do know that here in the U.S., we, in a lot of states, there's like a three strikes and you're out rule, and it doesn't matter how violent the offense is. It's like, okay, any crimes, you know.
You're showing this pattern and that's it.
Exactly. And so I know, you know, different states will have the different rules and everything, but I just, this case boggles my mind.
Mm-hmm.
How could it have gone so wrong? And I don't know the terms of his parole, so I don't know who was checking in on him. I don't know if he had to go to meetings or whatever, but he was obviously hanging out with the wrong people.
Well,
he was obviously dating.
If he's bumming around, like, when here in America, when you get out, you have to have a place, a valid place to go.
Absolutely.
To live. Yeah. They check up. They go to the house that you're that you say that you're going to live, and they check it all out, and they have to approve it. So,
yeah.
I mean, did they just...
And they make you get a job, and they check in with your employer, and yeah, there's a lot of stuff you have to do. But, you know, this was, I don't know, back in 2012 when he was let out. I know that seems modern day, but that was still a while ago.
Right.
A lot has changed since then. And like I said, I don't know how it is in the UK or in England for that matter, but it's frustrating that Don was murdered, okay? Because he served time for the attacks on the other women.
Mm-hmm.
He went to prison. He was let out on parole,
mm-hmm.
you know? And then he attacked again, and then he evaded arrest and was, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's like he had this pattern of violence, and instead of putting him away for a long time,
yeah,
he was just paroled again.
That's so sad.
And then he killed two people.
So
sad. I just don't get it.
So senseless.
I mean, it is so sad. So I really wish I had like something good to come from this story, but really I don't. I just have a head scratcher and this just like
a frustrating end.
It just boggles the mind. And I think the thing about me is when I'm listening to a podcast, I like a case to be presented to me, beginning, middle, end, tied up in a nice bow, here's what happened. But when I'm digging for stories that I have never heard of before or I want to cover, it's because it's like, we need to talk about things like this.
Yeah.
We have to talk about how this could happen. How could this happen?
Right.
Something needs to change. And if we just like gloss over these stories or we just read about it and go, wow, well, that's, I can't really do a, I can't do an episode on that case because it doesn't really have an ending.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm doing it a disservice because these victims deserve to be remembered, talked about, so that this kind of stuff doesn't happen anymore.
Right.
I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
I would be pissed if one of my loved ones was murdered, but I would be royally pissed if they were murdered after the person had murdered someone else.
Absolutely.
And got out of prison.
Oh my goodness.
So, in remembrance of Don Wisdom and Kelly Pierce is all I have to say. Anthony Ayers, you suck.
Well, I'm glad he's back in prison.
Yeah, he's going to die there. I don't know if he's still alive, but either way, he's not having a good time.
Good.
So, and he's not going to be killing anybody else for the most part. I mean, I don't think he'll kill anyone in prison, but.
Well, now I got to go research on what we need to do to come up with some kind of solution for these kinds of things. Who do I need to talk to?
I know. Who do we need to talk to? I'm going to do some more digging. I'm going to do some more digging and maybe next time we can talk about it.
All right.
So that's my case for you. Sorry, guys.
Debbie Downer.
I know. I mean, this is a true crime podcast.
It's not supposed
to be. It's not exactly... Yeah, it's not exactly church.
Mm-hmm.
You're not supposed to leave feeling refreshed.
I guess so. Well,
thank you for sharing. Thanks for listening.
Yeah.
All right, guys, come back next week for more of this upbeat church.
We'll see. I haven't decided what story I'm going to do, so...
Make sure it's upbeat.
I'm going to I will do my best.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Bye, y'all.